Hello, everybody. Good to be with you. Michael Millerman here, as usual. I guess the big news from yesterday is that Tucker Carlson interviewed Alexander Dugin. And for many people, that would have been the first time that they have seen Dugin or heard about him. And you who follow this channel, you have had many opportunities to learn about Dugin and to hear about him. And so I thought today it'd be nice just to get together and go over some of the details of his political theory. Have many of his books here on hand if you have questions about it. And here's the first one that was published in English, The Fourth Political Theory, which I co-translated. You can hear me talking to Orrin McIntyre about this over on his channel. We did a five-part series. You may have basic questions about the idea of the fourth political theory. Neither liberalism, nor communism, nor fascism, but something else. So that's something we can discuss. By the way, I don't think you can buy this version anymore. Arctos, the publisher, has put out a different designed version. Amazon, as I'm sure you heard, if you watched the Tucker interview or if you know from other sources, Amazon does not sell Dugin's books, so you have to get them from the publisher or secondhand. Here's really the one that I think he was mostly talking about yesterday, The Great Awakening versus The Great Reset. Not a bad starting point, to tell you the truth, if you're looking to learn about Dugin, a pretty short read. And it's both dealing with topical issues like Biden, the war on Trump, the various points of international conflict geopolitically and what they signify, the movement towards transgenderism and post-humanism. All of that is here. So if you look actually at the if you look at the thumbnail of the Tucker Carlson interview, which I think I can put up for you. Where is it here? Yeah, so you see that or no? Hang on. Down here, here's Tucker Carlson's YouTube channel. Okay. Klaus Schwab, Transgenderism and AI is how he titled it. And those are the themes that Dugin's primarily talking about. Not, let's say, in the fourth political theory. You do have some things about gender. You don't have much about AI. You have nothing about Klaus Schwab in the fourth political theory book. But in this book, The Great Awakening versus The Great Reset, you do. And I recommend that you read it if you're interested in Dugin. I did a video on it. I also did an interview on a channel called Blogging Theology. It's been my most watched interview ever. So I think that one came across clearly. But if you look, The Great Reset is the first part of Dugin's discussion here. In 2020 at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Klaus Schwab announced The Great Reset as a plan for humanity, what it's supposed to accomplish, what the problem is, and why so much of what's happening in the world can be interpreted as an objection to the plans of The Great Reset. A very interesting analysis of American objections to The Great Reset, because what Dugin says is that in the case of the United States, it's not primarily philosophical, so it's not like everybody in the United States, like Tucker Carlson himself, for example, who feels some sort of antipathy towards the program of The Great Reset. It's not that they really fully have delved into the essence of human nature at a philosophical level in the way that Dugin has tried to do with his studies of Heidegger and Husserl and all the philosophers, including some of them that I'm going to show you here in this live stream. But it's a kind of deeply intuitive felt rejection of tendencies that you sort of just, you know, there's this saying about pornography, you know, like you'll know it. How do you define it? Doesn't really matter because you're going to know it when you see it. So same too with the American revulsion towards the Great Reset. Somehow there's an intuitive disgust and a sense of it, even if it happens to lack a deep philosophical basis. And Dugin does in this book, The Great Awakening versus The Great Reset, as well as in many other books over his career, try to provide something like a philosophical foundation for it. And you know, when you, there are many people who think, okay, we're going to be all over the map because there's a lot to say about Dugin, a lot that I'm happy to share about him, and hopefully you have questions of your own that I may be able to address. But some people think and say that Dugin is very much anti-West. That's true in one way and not true in another way. He's against, as he says, political modernity, Western political modernity, but not against the West as such. And let me read you some passages from the Great Reset book that make this case. So he says, there's a philosophy behind the globalists, and in order to fight this philosophy, we need to capitalize on the alternative. We need to revise the relations of the West against the East, or the West against the rest. We need to give the West its proper place in a multipolar structure. Again, this is Dugin. You may disagree, but it's important to see what exactly he says. And he says that we need to revise to return to what we lost at the beginning of modernity. We need to reappropriate the philosophical treasure of those authors and philosophers and metaphysicians and schools of thought that we have abandoned and leave behind modernity. Remember, I said he's not against the West as such. He's against Western political modernity. So he says, I think this is also a feature of the Great Awakening, to return to Plato, to return to antiquity, to return to the Middle Ages, to Aristotle, to Christianity, to the traditional religions, all traditional religions. This is traditionalism. The Great Awakening is a kind of philosophical and metaphysical program, a manifesto that deals with the Great Reset as an absolute evil. It's not just a defense of Republicans against Democrats in the United States. It's a much deeper concept. And I think we're now challenged to create the common global front of the Great Awakening, where American protesters, meaning the pro-Trump protesters, will be one wing, and European populists will be the other wing. Russia in general will be the third. It will be an angelic entity with many wings: a Chinese wing, Islamic wing, Pakistani wing, Shia wing, African wing, and Latin American wing. So this particular book says, let's organize the great battle taking place across the world stage and running through the heart of humanity. Let's make sure that we see that battle as the forces that are aligned to destroy the human essence. I think he talked about that on the Tucker interview, where he said individualism is a liberation from collective identity up to and including the identity of being human. And let's put all the people who support that project and its tendencies on one side, and everybody else who's interested in the preservation of the dignity and specific nobility of the human being on this side of the equation. And so this is, okay, one of the books that you could look at if you're trying to learn about Dugin. Very nice, short, sweet, programmatic, manifesto type work. Let me see, should I put the comments, if you're making any, up on screen here? Let's move that over so I can be, your conversation is going on, and wait, oh my gosh. All right, is that good? So first of all, good to be with everybody. Nice to see you. Obviously, whenever Dugin is in the news in a prominent way, people ping me about it, since I've been writing about him for 10 years and translated several of his books. So, you know, I'm happy to contribute what I can to the conversation and be helpful if I can be. Okay, people commenting here on the Dugin-Tucker interview that he's banned. I mean, it's true. It's not only the case that his books are not available on Amazon. He's also under sanctions. So I had been translating one of his books on Heidegger, just as he was put under the most recent round of sanctions, I think. And I initially had been hoping to complete that translation partially by getting some, you know, funding, by pre-selling the part of the translation that I'd already done. But in order to avoid any possibility of sanctions related issues and difficulties, I just released it out into the wild for free, the part of the translation that I had done. So I guess I should show you about that. Those of you who are looking to do deeper reading on Dugin, especially on Dugin's Heideggerianism, which is an important part of his thought, he has called Dugin Dugin has called Heidegger the deepest foundation of the fourth political theory. So I'll just drop this in the link. I'll just drop this link in the chat. It's a link to the first part of my translation of Dugin's book called Martin Heidegger, The Possibility of Russian Philosophy. And you can download it for free at that link. Okay. So what else are people saying here in the chat? Let me go back up. Main contributor to Dugin's recent popularity in the West. Yeah, I mean, listen, I pursued him as a thinker that I thought was worthwhile. And let me just say something about that quickly. So what does it mean to listen to and to learn from and to take an interest in a controversial thinker like Alexander Dugin? Does it mean that you must accept everything he says? Absolutely not. You accept every premise, every conclusion, everything he says about geopolitics and ethno-sociology and political philosophy in America and Russia and everything that you can find about him online. Is that what it means to study a controversial thinker, that you hook, line, and sinker believe every single word that he said? No. I mean, this is basic. I was talking on the channel recently about this book called The Intellectual Life by Sir Talange, a Dominican scholar. I think it was published 1920-ish. And as he says, very elementarily, you know, you want to learn from everybody. And the way you learn is basically you read and think. You have to do some some mental operations of your own in terms of working out what's valuable and what's not valuable, what's insightful and what's not insightful. So let me give you a short example, okay? Of course, I was aware of Heidegger before I started reading Dugin, but I didn't really have a mental model in which this book, Heidegger's Contributions to Philosophy of the Event, is such a prominent text in Heidegger's corpus, that it could be so important, not only for understanding Heidegger and his philosophy, but for understanding basic problems of political theory and political philosophy. But when I read Dugin's book, Martin Heidegger, The Philosophy of Another Beginning, I was convinced by the case Dugin made for the importance of this book by Heidegger in this period of Heidegger's writings. So I learned something extremely important from Dugin that I don't believe I would have learned otherwise in quite the same way. So yes, I've tried over the last 10 years to put Dugin on the table as a thinker who deserves our attention, not our unwavering loyalty and subjection to everything he's ever said, but he gives us so much to think about and in ways that aren't exactly the same as what you get from Western conservatism. Okay, over and over again, there are examples of things you can learn sort of looking through Dugin's eyes that you may not have learned otherwise. I have a bunch of books here because I want to give you some more examples. So just one second. Hang on. Oh boy, there's so many examples to work with, but let's just take this. This is another author that I myself had not integrated into my understanding of political philosophy, really until I saw how much Dugin himself was writing about Henri Corbin. Henri Corbin, okay, this is Creative Imagination in the Sufism of Ibn Arabi. And you're thinking, what? Like you're reading some... Let's take the case of an extreme anti-Duginist, okay? You're reading some sort of weird Russian right-wing fascist type Nazi person. You must just want to, you know, kill all Ukrainians or something. Like, go away. And meanwhile, it's like, no, you know, Dugin has a line that says something about an author you've never heard and an idea you may not be familiar with, Creative Imagination in the Sufism of Ibn Arabi, okay, medieval Islamic mysticism. And you're like, I wonder what he's talking about. You go by the book, and you learn something you didn't know, and you integrate it into a model of the world that suddenly becomes richer and more interesting, more insightful, more profound. Okay, I think that's a good way to read. It's one of the big things I personally have learned from Dugin and would recommend that you do. So let's take the fourth political theory book as an example, the first one that was published in English. Okay, this particular one I co-translated. And if you start reading it, I mean, the very first page here, there's a reference to Guy Debord, okay, a French Marxist philosopher and founder of the Situationist International, whose book Society of the Spectacle tells us something. Okay, so fine, you start reading this and you're like, okay, I didn't really know. That's from the introduction by Searle, but you're like, all right, there's an author there maybe I wasn't familiar with. Or if you look at the first page of Dugin's book proper, Carl Schmitt is referenced. Now, many of you know Schmitt, but not all of you do. So suddenly it's like, okay, fine. Dugin's talking about Carl Schmitt. Maybe I should read The Concept of the Political. Maybe somehow the crisis of liberalism has something to do with the concept of the political. For Dugin, it does. And then suddenly you're in a bigger conversation about all the people who have read and commented on Schmitt's book, including, in this expanded edition, the notes by Leo Strauss. Okay, so what does that mean? If you can see here on screen, and the expanded edition of The Concept of the Political includes Leo Strauss's notes on that book. So now you went from the first page of Dugin's fourth political theory, and you have become aware of a debate over the concept of the political, one that leads you right into basic themes of political theory, political science, and political philosophy. You see, so it's not like you're getting indoctrinated by Dugin, you're getting introduced to a set of fundamental questions, his answers to which may be insightful and illuminating. Okay, but let's go down through the comments here. That was an explanation again for my interest in why, you know, when I teach Dugin at my school or when I write about him in my books, like I have a book called Beginning with Heidegger. Here, I'll show you that. This was effectively my dissertation, but, you know, with some extra editing and kind of put nicely together for you to read, Beginning with Heidegger. If you see there, Strauss, Rorty, Derrida, Dugin, and the Philosophical Constitution of the Political, because all of them credit Heidegger for some fundamental breakthrough insight into philosophy and politics, but each of them, Derrida, Dugin, Strauss, and Rorty, think about that slightly differently, in such ways that you'd be like, Dugin is on the far right, Derrida's on the far left, Rorty's a social democrat, Strauss, who knows, neoconservative, defender of constitutional liberalism. Like, what exactly is Strauss? So that's how you think about these things, okay, instead of just imbibing them. But yeah, Fourth Political Theory, first book to be published, nice one. Great Reset, The Great Awakening versus The Great Reset, recommended reading. So other stuff like this right here, Political Platonism. Okay, this I did translate. This is short little presentations on Plato and politics. Okay, that's not all it is, but that's a large part of what it is. So just to give you a sense of what's in there. Before I go back to the chat, there's deconstruction of democracy. The concept of democracy is not neutral and self-evident. I believe that was discussed in part on the Tucker Carlson interview yesterday, right? Minority and majority meanings of democracy. So here, surprisingly, Dugin has an interpretation of democracy in terms of Plato's Parmenides. Who would have thought? Okay, who would have thought? And other things like that, all right? Passage on Julius Evola, which you may want to, I've done some videos on Evola that people have commented on recently. All right, that's traditionalism in response to progressive postmodernism, Christianity and Neoplatonism, Heraclitus and Russia, existential theory of society. So if for some of you, that's going to sound ridiculous, in which case, don't read this book, okay? But for some of you, that's going to sound pretty fascinating, in which case, do read it. All right, let me go back to the chat. So some of you have already seen the interview, maybe not everybody. Take a look. As I said, the main themes are drawn from the Great Reset book. What else do we have here? Most Americans sense deep down that liberalism is anti-human. Yeah, you know, I don't want to spend too much time here looking for specific passages in books, but I do think that what Dugin says about the, let me read you part of this. Okay. So in the first part of the Great Reset book, he describes sort of the various tendencies of this Great Reset movement, but then he transitions into the protest against it, the Great Awakening, which he calls a scream in the night. And I think what he says about that, especially in the US context, is pretty on point. Why don't I just read this for you? Okay. Hopefully you don't mind. So he says, we're approaching this idea of the direct antithesis to the Great Reset, which we're going to call the Great Awakening. This slogan was first put forth by American anti-globalists, such as the host of the alternative TV channel InfoWars, Alex Jones, who was subjected to globalist censorship and deplatforming from social networks in the first phase of the Trump presidency, and QAnon activists. So he's taking this phrase from the American protest against the movements of the Great Reset. It's important, Dugin writes, that this is happening in the US, where bitterness has raged between the globalist elites and the populists who had their own president, namely Trump, albeit for only 4 years and stiffened by administrative obstacles and the limitations of their own ideological horizons. Unencumbered by serious ideological and philosophical baggage, meaning American anti-globalists are not necessarily, as I said earlier, relying on Husserl and Heidegger and Plato, anti-globalists have been able to grasp the essence of the most important processes unfolding in the modern world. Globalism, liberalism, and the Great Reset as expressions of the determination of liberal elites to see their plans through to the end, including dictatorship, large-scale repression, and campaigns of total disinformation, have encountered growing and increasingly conscious resistance. Right? You know that. Anti-globalism is a growing force. He mentions Alex Jones here again on that. But listen to this. He says, what's now awakening is not a camp of ideological opponents of liberalism, the enemies of capitalism or ideological opponents of democracy. They're not even conservatives. They are just people as such, the most ordinary and simple, but people who want to be and remain human, to have and keep their freedom, gender, culture, and living concrete ties to their homeland, to the world around them, to the people. The Great Awakening, just one more passage here to give you a sense of Dugin's analysis, which, to repeat, in my opinion, is on point. The Great Awakening is spontaneous, largely unconscious, intuitive, and blind. It is by no means an outlet for awareness, for conclusion, for deep historical analysis, but it is sort of like a healthy reaction. Okay, and then, as I say, Dugin, as a philosopher, he wants to provide that deeper interpretation, deeper understanding, and provide some philosophical guidance for it. So in the appendix to the Fourth Political Theory, Great Reset book, he in effect says that the Fourth Political Theory can help us to understand the meaning of the Great Awakening in relation to the Great Reset. All right. Let's go back to the chat, see what's on everybody else's mind. So yes, most Americans sense deep down that liberalism is anti-human. That's why I wanted to read that passage, because for Dugin, that is a natural, spontaneous gesture of the American people. What's wrong with being against the West? Ask persona non grata. It's not that there's anything wrong with it. I just wanted to clarify that when Dugin talks about being against postmodernity, leftist postmodernity, or Western political modernity, he doesn't see himself, he says, as being against, for example, the medieval West or the classical West or the ancient West. In fact, he would like to restore, as he says often, the study of Plato and Aristotle and Dante and so on. Okay, so what else do we have here? Yeah, so Havana Bob Channel says, had the feeling Dugin wanted to tell much more than the time of this small interview allowed. Yes, so you should know about Dugin, especially those of you for whom that was kind of your first exposure. As I've already tried to show you, he writes a lot. There's a lot that he wants to say. In some sense, he has built a grand worldview, whether you call it the fourth political theory or its earlier version, National Bolshevism, or it's specifically somehow Russian nomenclature, Eurasianism, or whether you want to take it in some other significance. It's a system that is meant to encompass and entail many different things. And so much more than you can say in 20 minutes for sure. So let me give you an example of that. Dugin has a book in Russian called Ethnosociology, which I translated into English, and it's available in two volumes. Here, I think I have with me just one of them. So there's this one, Ethnosociology, The Foundations, which goes over various schools of cultural anthropology and sociology and so on, and describes the kind of important conceptual contributions that they've made to our understanding of society. And then the second volume is called Ethnos and Society, which is Dugin's particular elaboration using the concepts that he thinks works best of, I do think I have a copy of that. Here we go. So this is one book in Russian. It's two books in English, okay? Ethnos and Society. This is where he elaborates his own particular model of the relationship between the ethnos, the folk or people, the nation state, civil society, global society, and post society. So yeah, I mean, obviously not something he could get into detail about in a short interview, right? Where he chose to focus, I think, on the theme of the Great Reset and the Great Awakening. But that's the ethnosociology side of his work. And then he has many books on geopolitics, including one that I translated, if you don't mind my saying, called Last War of the World Island, Contemporary Geopolitics of Russia. I was a student at University of Toronto at the time, and I was advised to translate it pseudonymously, if you can believe that. That's how much heat there was for working on Dugin even then. So you won't find my name in it, but it doesn't matter. Okay, it's a good book if you want to understand Russian geopolitics. And some background about the contemporary configuration of Russian geopolitics. So this book covers, you know, the key concepts of geopolitics, like land power, sea power, Mackinder, and all of that, as well as, I'll just give you a sense of what's in this, okay? Yeah, geopolitics of the USSR, starting with the 1917 revolution, civil war, or Versailles, early Stalin, and so on, okay, all the way to Yeltsin, social significance of Yeltsin's rule, change in Yeltsin's views after his conflict with parliament, Putin, and all of that. So if you want to sort of crash course in Russian geopolitics from Dugin's perspective, I think this would be the English book to work on. So again, what point am I making here? That Dugin's interests, they span in a way that, you know, you can't capture in one interview and you can't capture in one book. So I'll give you a clear example using what's at hand. If you want to know how Dugin thinks about basic political concepts like democracy using philosophers like Plato, this would be the book, even though it doesn't have a ton of information on geopolitics. If you want to see how Dugin understands geopolitics, you read a book like this, and then you're left with a question, or you may be, if you like to think about these things, what's the link between what Dugin has to say about Plato and Heidegger and Henri Corbin and these other thinkers, and what he has to say about geopolitics? Is there a link? I think that's a nice intellectual exercise. Sometimes he's explicit about it. Sometimes he makes you think. And let me show you something about that. 1 minute. Oh, So there are books of Dugin's that are not translated into English. And I would say that his 20 plus book series called Noomachia, that's what this says in Russian, okay? Noomachia. No-o like noose, like noetic. Machia like machination on one hand, but conflict really here. So you have like the war. I have a course on the Noomachia book series with a nice excerpt that you can just read for free. You don't have to give your email. You don't have to spend any money. And it talks about the wars of the mind. Dugin himself says this is open to interpretation. Wars within the mind, wars of the mind, or of the intellect. Okay, so this Vayne Uma, wars of Nus. Okay, and this is a 20 plus something volume book series. As I say here, I just pulled a random one out. The Logos of Europe. Okay, the Logos of Europe. So his notion of Noomachia somehow combines his basic philosophical principles about Plato and Heidegger with his geopolitical views. So you could say roughly, Plato, Heidegger, and all of that, they represent the vertical dimension. The science of geopolitics, simply stated, represents the horizontal dimension. And Noomachia is the sort of the sophisticated correlation of the vertical and the horizontal. So yeah, if you want to have a course on that book in the school, but that's just to show you, you know, untranslated books of his. Here's another one. This is the one where I did translate. I have put a link already in the chat. I translated the first part of this. Okay. Martin Heidegger, The Possibility of Russian Philosophy. Very nice book. I would have liked to translate the whole thing, but as I say, the fact that it takes a lot of time and effort, maybe now it's easier with, I don't think you could run this through an AI translator and really get anywhere, especially the second part of the book, because in the second part of the book, he takes the difficult notions from Heidegger's philosophy, in particular, a lot of Heidegger's neologisms, runs them into the Russian language, and then tries to make an interpretation of the difference between why it was that Heidegger had to put it this way. And when you translate it into Russian, there are minute and sometimes significant changes of great philosophical significance. There's no AI translation program that's going to be able to handle that kind of nuance, unfortunately. So this is a nice book for Russian speakers. If you're not a Russian speaker, as I said, I translated the first part of it. It's freely available online. Okay. And also some things that I have written, as I told you, like if you try to correlate his political philosophy and his geopolitics, or if you just try to think through the significance of his teaching, it's a fun challenge. So I've done that over the years. I compiled my essays into this book, Inside Putin's Brain. And you can probably find that for free online in PDF form too. All right, so let's go back to the chat, really just going through and commenting here. Hang on. Organize the books. So yeah, that was in response to Havana Bob's comment that Dugin wanted to tell much more than the time of this small interview is allowed. Like, let me show you. I like to make this point because I think people can be inclined to rush to judgment when it comes to understanding Dugin. And there are reasons for that. But I have been convinced since quite an early time that there's a lot there worth looking at more carefully. So let me just show you this. And again, don't get me wrong here, okay? This is not me telling you to believe everything that Dugin has ever said about anything. It's actually me just appealing to those of you who like to get into the basic concepts, fundamental questions, and controversial thinkers in a way that can be valuable. So let me just put this on screen for you. This is one of Dugin's many different website portals. It's one that I think is particularly significant, paidauma.ru. Okay, what is paidauma? Well, Dugin is highly interested in the question of education for many reasons, okay? Partially because if you're going to liberate a multipolar world, and each of the poles of a multipolar world, the poles of a multipolar world are civilizations, and a civilization is partially defined by its paidauma, by its paideia, by its education, by its formation, by its cultural codes, and all of that. So in order to make this maybe somewhat, I know he's got an English tab, but let's just pop it over here. So if you look, okay, there are a lot of different videos, speeches, because there was this second session of the International Fourth Political Theory Congress, but go a little bit deeper here. Look what he has on his paidauma page. Look at the subjects. Let's start with the subjects. Okay, philosophy, first and foremost. No surprise, I consider Dugin a philosophical supremacist. But look at some of these other topics. Okay, Daria Dugina, his daughter who was assassinated, as some of you know, who herself had things to contribute to our understanding of politics and philosophy. So he's done a lot of work, as has his team, memorializing her and her contributions. But let's move for a minute to some of these other themes and topics represented in his online education portal. Anthropology, sociology, I showed you ethnosociology, economy, culture, Platonism, like the political Platonism book, 4PT, that's fourth political theory, TMM, that's theory of a multipolar world. Okay, obviously, the second M is a translation issue here, as we clicked over from the Russian to English. That's theory of a multipolar world, the name of one of his books that I also translated in English. Geopolitics, radical subject, I'm writing an essay about that now. Obscure but important component of his thought. Orthodoxy, traditionalism. So, you know, Dugin has written about Evola and Gwenon, and that's a huge part of his thought as well. For those of you who don't really know Plato and Heidegger, but you do know Gwenon and Evola, Dugin is a traditionalist thinker. Theater. Okay, when I interviewed Dugin on my YouTube channel, I asked him about this. He has a lecture series on the ontology of the theater, which is pretty fascinating. Okay, go a little bit deeper. Look what he talks about. I mean, these are topics that may interest you independently of the war in Ukraine, let's say. The doxes and paradoxes of time, okay? Metaphysics of temporality. Not for everybody, but for some people, okay? Eschatology, Callipolis, Platonic lectures and seminars, Aristotle's phenomenology. I really, really love this course right here. This is, I watch this just as a, you know, when I moved to Montreal, I started watching this, but just as I was watching it, Dugin's YouTube channel got shut down. And it became very difficult to watch it because they were originally being posted to YouTube. When they ended up being posted somewhere else, they became way too slow to download. Phenomenology of the radical subject. So these are like, I wish if I could pick one of these to translate into English on the spot, it would be this one, of course, on phenomenological readings of Aristotle. Really valuable lecture series. Noumachia, you remember I was just telling you about Noumachia? I think these are in English, actually. So the three logoi, geosophy, okay, ancient Greece, Moscow art theater. So it's like, nice topics, okay, nice topics. And this gives you a sense, you saw it down there, Russian school of Neoplatonism. Some of that I have probably translated in the Plato book, Platonism, Antiquity, Mysticism. So there you go. It's like, as I was mentioning, Americans who oppose the Great Reset, yeah, some of them read Nietzsche. Some of them might even read Hegel. How many of them read Brentano? It's hard to say for sure. You get the sense that not so many. How many of them have lecture series on Eckhart and Suso and Tauler and the various German mystics, okay, Jakob Bem, Paracelsus. This shows you where Dugin gets into some of the mystical or occult themes, okay, Paracelsus, Hermeticism. He talks about Gnosticism in his Noumachia book. So why am I showing you this? Again, I just want to give you an overview. Those of you who may not know, who is this man? What are the topics that interest him? Philosophy of war, yes. The mission of his daughter, yes. These things should be obvious. The deep concern with philosophy may be less obvious, even though Tucker Carlson did introduce him as a philosopher. So you can take a look at that. And up here, there's an English language version. This was during coronavirus. He had these lectures here. Honestly, I don't remember them being in English, to tell you the truth, because I remember live tweeting translations of them. But okay, Dasein, the Heideggerian theme, okay, end of globalization, closed national economy. Here you see, since I'm one of the most prominent English language expositors of the thought, I guess he's got some of my stuff there up on screen, but other things you can look at too. Okay, Old Believers, some people ask about his Christianity, and Old Believers is not something I know a lot about, okay, because I don't know the Christian side of his thought as well as I know, let's say, the Platonic or Heideggerian side of his thought. But if you're interested in that, you know, what's Dugin's thought? What are Dugin's thoughts on Orthodox Christianity, and in particular before the schism or something like that, so you can go see what he has to say about Old Believers. Again, this is just an overview, so you know where to look and what kinds of things you'll find. Oh yeah, something else I recommend, this is for the particularly philosophically inclined among you. So there are different things, you know, you want Islamic philosophy, go there, you want geopolitics, go somewhere else, you want multipolarity, but for those of you who are particularly interested in basic philosophical questions, and you want to know kind of what Dugin thinks, if you go over to this English page, scroll down. Listen, maybe you'll like this, maybe not, but I think it's worth listening to. You see this conference, Wozu Vlasofen and Duftige Zeit, and you get this first lecture on the radical subject. Remember, I told you it is an important but obscure topic in Dugin's thought, so I do recommend that. All right, now let me go back over to the chat, see what's going on with all of you. Hey, Nice to be with you. Thanks for spending your time here. Look at Dugan on Tucker Carlson. Who would have thought? Maybe you saw it coming, maybe not, but good occasion for us to spend some time together, right? Let's see. So Virtuous Stray says, I don't even see why anything he says is controversial. Really just obvious observations. Look, some of the things that he says are obvious. They may be obvious to you. Okay, analysis of postmodern post-liberalism, crisis of modernity, the forces of the Great Reset. But you should be open to the things in his thought that are not so obvious in my view. I mean, when he talks, for example, about angels in the fourth political theory. Maybe you're not into that. When he talks about the radical subject, as I say, it's not so obvious. When he says that Heidegger is the deepest foundation for the fourth political theory, he says Heidegger is the key to the Russian tomorrow. Is that obvious? Is it obvious that in thinking about the future of Russia's destiny in the world, Heidegger is the key? I don't think it's obvious, personally. And that's why I've spent a lot of time writing about Dugan's Heideggerianism to try to make sense of passages like that. What else here? So is Dugan an occultist? He has an interest, as I mentioned before, in Hermeticism, in Gnosticism, in Paracelsus, in alchemy. But the nature of the interest, you know, you sort of have to do some work yourself to discover its full significance. He's open to the world of the occult and the esoteric as something deserving our thought, at the very least. And I think that's fair. You know, I'll give you an example of another thinker, Seraphim Rose. I just read his book, The Soul After Death, which was recommended by Mike Cernovich. And Seraphim Rose, an Orthodox Christian, he was, quote unquote, open to the serious study of after death experiences and out-of-body experiences, not in order to fully support them, but in order to give them their proper analysis, put them in the right place, show what they get right and what they get wrong. Dugan's English has gotten better. Yes, I think he does a fair number of English interviews. By the way, some of you may like to see the interview that I did with him on my channel, or that Jack Murphy did with him on his channel, or that Russians with Attitude did on their channel. Dugan's generous in giving interviews in English, so if you want to go deeper than the Carlson, there are places you can go, even outside my channel. Needless to say. Let's see. Yeah, so this point in Russian, those of you who can read it, you can read it. Those of you who can't, there's a question. How much of what Dugan thinks about philosophy can come across clearly to an American audience, especially to, you know, an American audience that's listening to Carlson and watching Carlson, not trying to in any way make a statement about the philosophical capabilities or interests, but it's just often the case that I think what comes across in a punchy and comprehensible way is the culture war criticism. And what may be harder to understand, as I said, like, what's the relationship between Plato's hypotheses in the Parmenides and various forms of democracy? That just takes a few more steps. Maybe it's not the kind of thing that you can do in 20 minutes on a Tucker Carlson show. So what else do we have here in the comments? The way Dugan has been demonized in the West is incredible. Well, I mean, on one hand, I think we should be fair somehow to both sides of the equation. He's an anti-liberal thinker, so it's no surprise that liberals should want to demonize him. There are times where he seems like he's quite clearly against, you know, American unipolar hegemony. So anybody who wants to preserve that American unipolar hegemony has good reason to want to be against him. There are other sorts of things he says where he steps on the toes of interests that might naturally, therefore, be opposed to him. And, you know, I had my own drama, as some of you may know, when I was a graduate student surrounding him. And sometimes it was like this. I'm pointing out to you, right? Plato, Heidegger, geopolitics, ethnosociology, phenomenology, okay, Brentano. And they pointed out to me, look, Dugan just, here's a photograph of Dugan and Ahmadinejad. Like, don't you realize you're supporting apocalyptic end of the world nuclear holocaust? And we just couldn't come to see eye to eye about that. David asks, is there something Dugan wrote on theology? Yes, he does write. I mean, there's not all of it is translated into English. That's always one of the big problems. One of his first books, Metaphysics of the Gospel, you know, was a, I think he described it in my interview I did with him as an attempt to read a Christian dogma through Evolian eyes, okay, through the eyes of Julius Evola and traditionalism. So yes, he does write, as I say, look up piedalma.ru, click it over to the English, see what you can find there. Another site of his, okay, guys, browse at your own risk, okay? Because I have no idea If I send you to these sites and suddenly Russians are spying on you or whatever the case is, please navigate at your own risk. This one is for the number 4, pt.su. It's another place where you can find a kind of, compilation of Dugin's various writings, learn more about his books, go to his other portals. So the reason I'm telling you this is you may wonder, oh, has he said anything about, let's pick some topic, okay? Like, has he said anything about, let's take Evola, because I've been lecturing on Evola lately. All right, so what do we have? We have some articles about Dugin on Evola in Italian. Okay, the legacy of European traditionalist Julius Evola in perspective. Maybe these are articles by Dugin or a lot of mentions of Evola on the site. So it's just a nice way to find out more about some specific theme if you happen to be looking. Let's go back over here. Yeah, Noomachia. Sorry, I said about the machination. So back at when we were talking about Noomachia, let me see, can I show you this? Probably worth taking a look. Here's what I want to show you. So here, okay, I have a school, millermanschool.com. One of the courses I teach is Dugin's Noomachia, not the whole 20 books, 20 something books, that's not possible, but an introduction to the underlying methodology. This underlying methodology has to do with three logoi, which he calls the light, the dark, and the black logos, or in terms of Greek myth, the Apollonian, Dionysian, and Sibelian logos. Okay, the three types of them are the Platonic, Aristotelian, and materialistic. Okay, so it's a nice comprehensive work. And the reason I wanted to show this to you, so you discovered Dugin's masterpiece and all that, is because, here, let me read this to you from, this is taken from volume 1, if I'm not mistaken, of Noomachia. So he says, the title Noomachia, which literally means war of the mind, intellect nous, and which can be conceived of as war within the mind, war of minds, or even war against the mind. Again, remember, mind here does not mean, I mean nous, okay, in the high sense, not just your own subjective thought. It's intended to emphasize the conflictual nature of logoi structures. Those are kind of like fundamental worldviews, okay, the Sibelian, Apollonian, Dionysian, as well as the multiplicity of noetic fields, in each of which surprises, conflicts, aporias, struggles, contradictions, and opposition lie in wait for us. The field of thinking is the field of warfare. Thoughts wage ceaseless wars not only against phenomenality, matter, and their own reorganization into elements, but also against other types of thoughts, other thoughts, and the complex diversity of vertical and horizontal, noetic and noeric chains that permeate the reality of the world on different planes and different geometries. So it's like you take thinking and you say, oh, thinking is a simple thing. No, it's not a simple thing. It's not a simple thing. The field of thinking is a field of warfare. Wars, then he says, this is a nice passage to give you a sense of the scope and significance of this project. Wars between people, including even the most cruel and bloody, are but pale comparisons to the wars of the gods, titans, giants, elements, demons, and angels. And these in turn are but figures illustrating even more formidable and profound wars unfolding in the mind, nous, in the sphere of nous and its limits, in which the mind itself borders the zone of madness. So those of you who said, you know, is Dugin into occultism, hermeticism, alchemy? Well, yes, but look what he says. Gods, titans, giants, elements, demons, and angels as figures illustrating the more formidable and profound wars unfolding in nous. So it's kind of like you have geopolitics, then you have the realm of the creative imagination or of the theological, divine, sacred, and holy, mysterious, occult, esoteric, and all of that. And then you have the realm of nous crowning the whole picture. Thus, everything is Noomachia. All right, so I'm like, okay. I don't know. Some of you read that, and it's going to sound crazy. Some of you are like me, you read that, and you must know more. So if you're one of those people who hears that and you must know more, then welcome to my world. Let's go back. Dadson has a comment here. Dugin shares a lot with the more pragmatic side of American 17 and 1800s line of thought. Yeah, but you know, he's also analyzed pragmatism as part of the American logos, the meaning of philosophy in America somehow being primarily its pragmatism, which isn't really true for Dugin's own thought. Okay, so he has an analysis of pragmatism and its relationship to U.S. thought, but we can't reduce Dugin's own view to pragmatism, in my view. Okay, David says he watched many times this course that I emphasized phenomenology of Aristotle, but he always gets lost. It's too much to grasp. Should I study phenomenology at first before you start this course on Dugin? Yeah, David, it may be helpful to read some Husserl on your own. Even Descartes, you know, if you read Descartes' Meditations, that's a good first step, because Descartes' Meditations, they lead you into the realm of the transcendental, because when you doubt everything away, you're left with the consciousness, right? I think, therefore I am. And that's a nice stepping stone into phenomenology, since, as I thought about it when I was working on this so long ago, kind of like Descartes dips his toes into the realm of transcendental consciousness, but then he quickly jumps back out of the water. And when Husserl, for example, in his Cartesian Meditations extends Descartes' Meditations, he sort of stays in the water longer. And those are the waters of phenomenology. They're the waters that are you have to sort of get acclimatized to. And so I think maybe if you haven't read Descartes' Meditations and then Husserl's Cartesian Meditations, that could be a nice way into that world. So other comments here about Stern and Lehi, National Bolsheviks, a little bit about that. Yeah, Dugin has I covered it on this channel, Metaphysics of National Bolshevism. I don't know that he's written about Lehi and Stern. I wouldn't be surprised if he has, but if you want to know about the quote-unquote Metaphysics of National Bolshevism, you should see his piece of writing on that topic that I covered on this channel before. So, okay. Hi, Christopher. Nice to see you. Yeah, many, many good comments here. Okay, thoughtful readers, some of you familiar with, some of you unfamiliar with Dugin and his work. Well, let's do a quick maybe summary, and then if you have other questions, I'll cover them, and we'll call it a day. Is there anything else I can show you? So first things first, Dugin's thought covers many different topics and disciplines. I'll give you one example. Geopolitics, that's the foundations of geopolitics, which you've heard of, or this last war of the world island, contemporary geopolitics of contemporary Russia. Okay, so geopolitics is like one dimension of his thought. Ethnosociology, I showed you the ethnosociology books. That's another dimension of his thought. And then you can try to correlate. What's the relationship between the various ethno-social categories and the various geopolitical categories? Okay, that's one thing. Then theology is something that's important to him, even though, like I say, it's not where I've spent most of my time. I haven't really translated much of his Christian thought or delved into the debates that he has in and around Christian doctrine and dogma. Although Christian themes do sometimes come out in other contexts, like in this book, he has a passage on Christianity and Neoplatonism. Okay, in fact, maybe I should just say something about that very quickly. He says, where do we have this? I think you're going to like it. I mean, it's going to be helpful for you. Yeah, Christianity and Neoplatonism, where he says that the significance of Neoplatonism is fundamentally understated in contemporary orthodoxy. Neoplatonic philosophy can help us to understand orthodoxy better. It would be helpful to compare the role of Neoplatonism not only in orthodoxy, but also in Islam and Judaism, as he puts it, and to study the influence of Neoplatonism on the Renaissance. All right, but in effect, he says that for contemporary Russian Orthodoxy, a new familiarity with Neoplatonism is vitally important. And he has this kind of plan for Orthodox Christians to study Neoplatonism. I guess I should show you something about that too, right? Okay, so you see many themes, all right? Geopolitics, ethno-sociology, Platonism, Neoplatonism, Orthodoxy, religion, traditionalism, Evonon and Gwella, Evola and Gwenon. Remember I told you he has kind of many different sites in his online node, and many different nodes in his online network. Here's an example too. You know, we're just reading about Orthodoxy and Platonism. This is platonism.ru. Again, navigate here at your own risk. Platonism with a Z, platonism.ru. You can't see, and I can't toggle it into English at the moment, but you know, up here, Dialogues of Plato, Neoplatonism, Seminar, Political Platonism, okay, Platonism and Traditionalism. So this shows you some of the topics that Dugin's interested in writing about. Okay, a passage here from Plato's Phaedrus. In the book Political Platonism, this is where I pulled, I think, most or all of the essays that I translated. I pulled from here. Dugin's not the only contributor, but he is the most prominent contributor to Platonism.ru. All right, so you have geopolitics, ethno-sociology, theology, philosophy. I told you that Heidegger is the deepest foundation, according to Dugin's own words, of the fourth political theory. So you have the whole realm of Heidegger studies, including translated and untranslated works. I've written about that in my book on Dugin, and I already gave you the link. I can give it again if you want, to the first part of my translation of Dugin's second Heidegger book. The first one is already available in English. What else can we say? He comments on contemporary events. That's the Great Reset versus the Great Awakening book, for example, on the significance of postmodernism today. And one of the interesting ideas that I discussed with Orrin McIntyre, for example, in our interview series, is that Dugin is not, you know, some conservatives, they oppose postmodernism and they want to go back to either modernity or pre-modernity. That's not quite Dugin's model. When Dugin opposes postmodernity, he opposes one version of it and he accepts, in many respects, another version of it. And he's somehow attacking the crisis of modernity from two fronts, from the pre-modern and the postmodern. And therefore, he doesn't just go back to Plato and Aristotle. He also incorporates themes in Heidegger and these other thinkers. And he recognizes that we are in postmodernity and we need to understand the sort of specific contours of this new social ideology and political philosophy, which he writes about in the Fourth Political Theory book. So you should know that, again, very simple level, right? What distinguishes Dugin from your typical Anglo-American conservative? Many things, but one is the attitude to postmodernity. It's negative so far as concerns leftist postmodernity, which is a kind of a headlong fall into virtuality and into all of these. It's kind of like a world without God, but with the devil. It's Devilopolis, as he also characterizes it somewhere. But the postmodernity that's open to the other forces, it's a little bit different. So again, there are things here to think about. Anything else I can tell you? If you liked the Tucker interview and you want to pursue exactly the themes that he mentioned there, probably the most natural next step is that Great Reset book. If you're interested in the Fourth Political Theory book, you should know that there's a second volume in English, this one, which I translated, okay, The Rise of the Fourth Political Theory, Fourth Political Theory, Volume 2. So in my course on the book, The Fourth Political Theory, I draw heavily on this too, because it's just important to understand as much as you can. All right, and so this book is helpful in that. Maybe I'll show you a picture from this. That's not a picture book, okay, but there's a... Yeah, here, I'll give you an example. There's a chart in the back of this book. Can you see that? It says on the top, it says first political theory, liberalism, second political theory, communism, third political theory, fascism/Nazism, and then a column for the fourth political theory. That's at the top. Then along the side, you have a various list of themes or topics or subject matters. Like, for example, subject, object, time, space, type of state, attitude toward the concept of class and the meaning of peasantry. Just give you a little bit more of an example of the kinds of things he's got running along the side of this. Attitude towards the nation, attitude towards private property, and so on. And so he goes through this chart and he says, well, what does liberalism say about intellectualism and elitism? What does liberalism say about third world? What does liberalism say about women, religion, society, equality, hierarchy? And he categorizes the fourth political theory in relationship to the other three. In some cases, I'll give you an example, because I think, again, this is the kind of thing that you kind of need to know if you want to know anything about Dugin. Let's take a natural starting point here. Okay. So look back at this, if you can see that on screen. So again, take the subject of liberalism is the individual, bourgeois individual. The subject of communism is the class. The subject in fascism is the state. The subject in Nazism is the race. The subject in the fourth political theory is Dasein, a notion from Heidegger, and a question mark. So the question marks you see in the fourth political theory, those are like the open dimensions of the theory. You know, they're not necessarily fully worked out. There's still room for creative exploration and hypotheses there. You know, what could be, what does the fourth political theory say about these things? So people shouldn't believe that it's a completely closed off and fully developed theory. There are suggestions, yes, hypotheses and all of that, yes, but also there's some openness. And if you see this M and pre-M, that means, is it fundamentally in line with modernity? Does it represent a different trend of thought, like romanticism over here? Is it pre-modern, which, remember, I told you some dimensions of Dugin's thought are pre-modern, or does it somehow fall outside of the space of modernity, pre-modernity, and post-modernity? So it's like, okay, to go back to where we started from, for some people, to have an interest in Dugin means you just support, you mean that crazy fascist, racist, anti-Ukrainian, pull up the worst possible quote you can find by him and say, yeah, this is just useful Russian idiots, and, you know, turn off your TV and go do something else. Okay, that's fine. If that's what a person thinks, they're not likely to really find something to resonate with here at all in the first place, I think, because it's kind of like preformed judgments and no interest in basic questions of political theory or political philosophy. But as I've tried to show you in this little Tucker Carlson Dugin interview after party, there's more going on than that. And hopefully those of you who are into that sort of thing, you know, found something valuable in the last hour that we've spent together. So let me just double check here that I don't have anything else I want to show you in terms of a book-based show and tell. Yeah, I would say again, just another extremely quick example. Okay, there's a debate that Dugin had with Bernard Henri Levy, and they mentioned this book, The Empire and the Five Kings, America's Abdication and the Fate of the World. And Dugin later reflected on the interview, debate itself, and he said he was very disappointed because Levy wasn't really willing to get into the substantial aspect of their disagreement. He sort of skated on the surface of, you know, accusations and insults and things like that. But what opens up for us when we see a debate between Dugin and Levy over a book like The Empire and the Five Kings and the question of America's abdication and the fate of the world is that we then get to go think it through. You know, you read this book, you see Levy's thesis, you rewatch Dugin's response to it, and you think about where the world is going and whose analysis is correct and why it's correct and who got what right and who got what wrong. You know, you enter into the debate directly. And so for me personally, even though, you know, this did not go over well with my academic supervisors at the time that I mentioned it so long ago, but don't really care because you just have to say what is true and what's the case. For me personally, reading Dugin has introduced me to authors I didn't know before, like Henri Corbin being a nice example. I've very much enjoyed the writing of his that I studied, and I don't know that I would have come across him otherwise. Maybe. Like Gershom Scholem, I think, mentions him. So maybe, you know, you could have gone from reading Strauss to reading Gershom Scholem to reading Henri Corbin. There are different roads here. But another thing, you know, that Dugin is valuable for, as I mentioned earlier, how he interprets Carl Schmitt, where he invokes his thought and doesn't invoke it. And that's part of a big debate because Schmitt is not a nobody, and there are, you know, Democrats reading him and right-wing anti-liberals reading him, and Strauss had read him and commented on him, like I said. Okay, Dugin gives you access to the world of traditionalism in a certain way, although not like a fawning, bootlicking adherent. Dugin takes his distance from Evola at times, explicitly saying he disagrees with his interpretation of Heidegger, for instance. So, look, it's not so often that you find intelligent people who have something interesting to say about politics, philosophy, theology, religion, spirituality, history, consciousness, and all of that. Is he the only one in the world who's an interesting commentator on these topics? No. Is he somehow uniquely important if you're trying to understand the thesis that Russia is a unique civilization, that it's trying to fight against Western unipolar hegemony, and that it's offering not only a geopolitical, but a theological and philosophical, epistemological, ontological, and educational throwdown? Yes, I think he's uniquely significant for those reasons. And anyways, you don't need me to pitch him. If you're here, you already know something about all of that, I think. All right, so, okay, should we leave it there? Let me just remind you, okay, I try to be generous here with my time, and it's always a pleasure to tell you the truth. I love these Tuesday live streams, and I'm happy to see everybody here. I want you to know where you can find more if you decide to. So if you go to duginbook.com, you'll see my two books, okay, Inside Putin's Brain and Beginning with Heidegger. They both discuss Dugin. You can also do other things on this page, like you can see some of my courses and things like that. But really, it's just an easy way to see my two books, both of which have something to say about Dugin. If you go to DuganCourse.com, you see my course on the fourth political theory, what it looks like. If you search Millerman Dugan on YouTube, okay, you'll see many, many things that I've done. Free interviews with Orrin McIntyre, my interview with Dugan himself, which you might enjoy, okay? So just look around. If you're interested in all of that, look around. If you've enjoyed this live stream, subscribe to the channel, comment, anything that makes the channel easier to find, helps it grow. Because when it grows, I'm happy to do more of these. Thank God it's been growing and we can spend this kind of time together. Okay, I showed you Pydauma.tv is a place where you can find more of Dugan's online materials if you're interested, as is this 4pt.su page, 4pt.su. To repeat, navigate at your own risk. Platonism.ru, can you see that URL up there with a Z? As for those Russian speakers who want to dig deeper. And there you go. So it was nice of Tucker Carlson to have Dugan on. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview. I hope you enjoyed this live stream. Comment, like, share, subscribe. Leave any questions you have. I'll answer what I can. And take care. Be well. Goodbye.